Whole genetics is a hot topic in cattle breeding right now. Consumers, retailers, and other parties are focusing on animal welfare. Questions are being asked about the need for and the ethics surrounding the dehorning of beef and dairy cattle. But what is poultness in a cow or a bull? How can you use poult genetics in your breeding strategy and be on the forefront of the future demands in the dairy industry? To give you the best advice on poultness and dehorning, I've invited an expert to join me in the studio. Jakob Lyge-Vorgaard, Senior Breeding Manager for Viking Red at Viking Genetics. This is the Breedcast produced by Viking Genetics. I'm your host, Hilke Wiersma. Hello and welcome, Jakob.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here again.
I thought we could start by looking at dehorning before we kind of look at the poultness and poult genetics. Tell us what dehorning is.
If we're looking on dehorning, it is to remove the horn, the cow's ham, the two horns. And historically, there's two reasons why we're working with it. Working with dehorning, it's mainly because of safety, but it's safety for the staff working with the people, so they're not getting injured by the horn. But it's also according to animals when they're in the barn, especially the loose barns, the free stall, so the animal is not hurting each other with the horn because they can't really hurt each other a lot with the horn. In the nature, it's not a problem because they have a lot of space, so they can easily get away from animals high in the hierarchy. But in the barn, the space is less than in the nature, so they need to be dehorned there according to animal welfare and don't hurt each other.
So basically it's an effect of domestication, basically. Why has dehorning become a problem for farmers?
Dehorning, it's not a nice job. It is a nasty job to do, and it's also adding pain to the animals. So from an animal welfare perspective, it is not a good thing to do. So for the farmer, it's not a good job, and of course, it's also costing a little bit of money. So if you can get rid of it, very much appreciate for the farmer.
What you're talking about the animal welfare, what are the consequences of that?
Of the consequences is when you're dehorning, you are adding pain to the animal. You are burning off the horn, so you are burning the animals. So in that way, you're adding pain to the animal, and that's from a welfare perspective not good. That's also why some countries have very strong regulations about it, that you have to put the calf to sleep, anesthesia, so they're not that way feel it, and they also have to put painkiller around the horns, but they're still a little bit sore some time afterwards for the dehorning. So animal welfare, it is an issue to dehorn the cows. Even that we have the benefit of they're not getting hurt later in their life, it's still a pain you're putting on the animals.
Yeah, and we know that, for example, in Germany and organic farms, there's a lot of regulations and push towards at least having a plan in organic farms for using poult genetics and not dehorning. What other countries do we have experiences with in terms of dehorning and poult genetics?
If we are looking on the history, as you said, as Germany, it started, a lot of the discussion for some years ago started in Germany, where they was said that they would put in regulation, they put in for the organic part. They run a lot of the discussion about it, and it has spread out to the world. And if we're seeing in New Zealand, the big dairy down there, where 80% of the milk is going, they are saying that the farmer need to have a plan for poult genetic. They need to work with poult genetic, or else they would not pick up the milk. So on that way, it can cost you money if you don't do it in New Zealand, because you have to find a new dairy. And if you're looking in other places, like in Denmark, for example, it is allowed to dehorn, but the organic, for example, in Denmark, they have a dispensation to get dehorning. And a dispensation is very easy to remove. You can do that over the night. You don't have to change the law. So on that way, it is in some country, you are slowly moving against that regulation can easily come in.
So the dehorning of beef and dairy cattle is under pressure. poll genetics are on the rise. Now let's have a look at how I, as a farmer, can use poll genetics and be proactive about meeting the future requirements and license to produce. Jakob, tell us what poll genetics is. What is polledness?
Polledness is, matter of fact, a defect, so the cows don't get don't have the horn. But it's what we call a positive, a defect, because it's something that is visible. So the farmer really wants it. So it's a good thing. So a positive defect, we can say. And it is that the animals don't have the horns. So that is polledness.
So basically polledness is an effect of inbreeding then?
Yeah, you can say that, but there's more kind of polledness. So it have started in different places where we have picked it up. But in general, it's a trait controlled by one pair of genes. So it's a monogenetic trait we're working with here. Even if it's coming from different breeds.
So what type of poll genetics are there in cattle breeding then?
When we're working with poll genetic, we are saying that they can be either a heterozygotic polled, single polled, or homozygotic, that is double polled. And to understand that, we need to get a little bit back to the basic for the genetic. All animals, they have two pair of genes sitting in the chromosomes, and we're getting one gene from the mother and one from the father. And those two genes, to make it very simple here, they are controlling polledness or not, or horned it is. And polledness, that gene is dominant, which is a very big positive thing here. So if the animal just have one gene that is polled, then the animals will be polled and don't have any horns. So on that way, if it is heterozygotic, it's only getting one gene, then it's polled. And if getting homozygotic, it's what we call double polled. And of course, it have no horns, but it's also only have the genes for polledness to breed on to the next generation.
All right. So what would happen if you breed a homozygotic bull with a non-polled cow then? What would the offspring be?
Yeah, when we're talking about a monogenetic trait, it is very interesting to mix it up. And if you have a homozygotic polled bull, then he have the two polled gene. And we have to go a little bit backward here to say, okay, how is genetically working? And when you have a monogenetic trait, you're saying that they are normally controlled by one gene. And you are having everybody have two genes in a normal chromosome. So they will get one gene from the father and one gene from the mother, controlling, in this case, the polledness phenotypic. So when we're having a homozygotic polled bull, he will always give a polled gene to his offspring, and the dam will give the horned, and thereby the offspring will be heterozygotic polled, have one polled gene, one horned gene, and phenotypically it will be polled. If we're then having the cases where the sire is only heterozygotic polled, then half of the time he would give on the polled gene to the next generation, and half of the time he will give the horned gene. So if he's used on a horned cow, we would have 50% of the time the offspring will be polled, and 50% of the time it will be horned. Then we're having the cases where it's too heterozygotic, so both the dam and the sire is polled with one gene. Then it's a little bit more lottery what you're getting out of it. 25% of the animals will be horned. 25% of the offspring will be homozygotic polled, having two polled gene. And then 50% will be heterozygotic, having one horned and one polled gene.
So basically, if you had that in that case, you'd have two animals that are actually polled, both of them, that could give a horned offspring.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you also have to remember here that 75% of the offspring will be polled.
Yeah. All right. So we have a question from one of our listeners that wrote to us on breedcast.com, and that's Mary from Denmark, and we appreciate that very much. She asks, can a polled bull still have horns and why? Because yes. What you're saying, what you said earlier, that if it has the polled gene, it's polled. But can a polled bull still have horns, and why is that?
I have to say yes and no to this question. We have some bulls having what they call scurls. It's looked like horn. And some of our polled bulls of Viking Red, they have these, and they can be quite big, these scurls. And then when we take video of them and say there's a Paul bull, we sometimes get the comment, oh, by the way, you took the wrong bull, or what's happening here? You said he was bald, and so on. But SCORAS is a gene that is affecting coming in when we're having talking about baldness. SCORAS is growth looking like horns, but they have not attached to the cranium like a horn have. So normally when you take them, you can move them around, they're loose, and they're growing in different directions. Often I see them, they're growing nearly backwards, so they're looking like the bull have been running very, very fast, and the air pressure have just pushed the horn back. But they can also sit nearly quite much to the cranium, so you, matter of fact, you cannot test for it, but you can take a picture of it to see if it's grown into a cranium. But SCORAS is this growth looking like horns. And you only see SCORAS when the animal is heterozygotic pauled, meaning having a paul gene and a horn gene. Because if the cow is horned, then they will get normal horns. If it's homozygotic pauled, it will be totally pauled. There will be no horn, nothing growth on there.
Interesting.
So we're only talking about heterozygotic here.
Yeah, all right. That's very interesting. And thank you to Mary for that question. If you have any other questions that you might want to ask, pop over to thebreedcast.com and put your question there. Let's say that I want to introduce polled genetics to my herd. How do I do that?
The first of all, you need to start inseminated with bulls that is polled, either heterozygotic or homozygotic, because you have to get the gene introduced to the herd. And here, even the cow, the bull have SCORAS, you can use him because he still give the polled gene into your herd. And here with SCORAS, it's also need to say that for a bull, if he have one gene of SCORAS, he will get this growth, but the cows need to have two of them. So we often see it in the bulls, these SCORAS, and not so much in the cows, which is very luckily because the farmers is working with the cows. If you want to introduce baldness in your herd totally, then you need to use homozygotic bald bulls. Then all the offspring will be bald. So that is the fastest way to do it, but it's not always the smartest way to do it that way. But you need to use polled bulls to get it introduced to your herd.
All right. So let's look at some of the different breeds. What kind of proportion are available of polled genetics within different breeds?
It's very different between the breeds, and there's also some country variation between it. If we're looking on the beef breed, for example, Hereford and Angus, they are very close to be all animals is polled there. They've been working with that for many, many years and been very active into it. So they're nearly polled, all of them. So selling a horned Hereford or Angus today is quite difficult.
Yeah, it's actually an kind of an extra thing that you get a horned Hereford bull.
Yeah, then it's the other way around that's not so common. And then if we're looking at the other beef breed, they are also doing a lot to get them horned. Polled, getting rid of the horned gene. If we're looking into the dairy cows, the Holstein and the Viking Red in the Viking areas, they are right now buying in 40 to 50% of their bulls they're buying in right now, the young bulls, they are polled. While the one they are selling semen off now, there's normally between 20 and 30% of them. So it's moving fast. And for Jersey, they're right now buying in with around 20 to 25% of their bought bulls today are polled. So it's moving fast. But I also say there's something with between the countries. And in Sweden, for example, they have done very much in their beef cattle to introduce the polled. So they are a little bit front there compared to many other countries in Europe. And also a country like Germany, where baldness started out to be the big discussion, they have been doing it very much. So there's a tendency to more German Holstein bulls, for example, are bald that compared to America or other countries.
So why do you think there's that difference in terms of the progression or the use of polled genetics in different countries?
Very much regulation. And as I said, it started out in Germany where they was afraid that it was the first law they proposed was that it should not be allowed to dehorn at all. And then a lot of farmers and AI industry went a bit to panic because they was afraid that they suddenly couldn't dehorn anymore and therefore they need to be polled. And breeding take a long time. Remember that a generation normally take at least 3 years. So from you starting to introduce polled into a breed and get it a very high proportion of it, it take many, many years. So you need to be ahead in breeding. And that's also the reason why we in Viking Genetic have looked very much on it now. There's not a lot of regulation around the world right now, but we need to be ready if it's coming in the next 10 years.
Yeah, and I guess it's also the balance between genetic progress and having that one single gene that you're looking for.
Yes, and that's also, as I said, it was not always smart just to use homozygotic bull when you want to introduce it. Because when you're going for a trait, in this case, poultness, you need to select for that trait, but that's also affects selection on other traits. So it's not possible to select so hard on other things like production, udder health, calving traits, type traits, and so on. Meaning that in general, when you're introducing a new trait, the total merit will be lower on these animals. And especially when you want them homozygotic, their total merit will be lower. So you will lose on other traits, which will have a negative economy effect on your future herd compared to production and other health and other traits.
Yeah. So it's a long process. You've, you know, you speak to lots of farmers and you, you're out and about, and you did an article about a farmer that had quite some success with polled genetics. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there was, first of all, I warned a short, small Facebook story. I think that was very funny. It was a farmer where the leader of the farm, he was dehorning one day, and he wrote on Facebook, like, it was amazing now that for just some years ago, they just dehorned everybody, didn't think about it. But now they was looking on it, and they just dehorned a big group, and half of them was polled. And it was amazing how fast it was going, and matter of fact, how nice it was not to dehorn all the calves. So that was a good success. And then I have another farm that I've been working with the poultness for many years, and he really developed his own a little bit tactic, where he's saying, if I have a polled animal, I put a horned bull on to increase the genetic level in it, to it, to keep a high genetic level in polled animals. And then if you have a horned cow, then he used a polled bull on that. So he, on that way, breeding unpolledness and high total merit at the same time. And that's, for example, the breeder for Fussy P, one of the top polled Viking Red Bulls. So he had a big success because he had this breeding philosophy where you have to combine a good genetic high level in total merit and poultness at the same time.
Jakob has shared his knowledge and expertise with us on how you can use polled genetics to prevent dehorning in your herd. Now let's have a look at some of the future trends and technologies related to polledness right now. Jakob, why are consumers and retailers and other parties looking at polledness and dehorning?
One of the main reasons is animal welfare. The consumer today, they are looking on more than just the price or the quality of what they're buying. They're also looking into the history about the product they're buying. They're looking into the animal welfare, the environmental, the sustainability, and so on. And their dehorning is one of the things they are looking on according to animal welfare. They don't want the farmer to add paint or extra paint to the animal, and therefore they say that they would like dehorning to stop. And that's also why we're seeing it, specifically in organic around the world, where they're putting in regulation and you need to work with there. That is because they have a higher expectation to the animal welfare in the organic production. So it is very much consumer driven, and it's giving the license to produce that if we're not moving forward in the cattle industry, trying to get consumer more liking our products, saying that that's okay, you can produce under this condition, then we don't have a future. So the consumer is driving very much what we're doing here.
How do you think that that will develop for the future, the animal welfare and towards the consumer?
There will only go one way. That's more and more animal welfare. The wishes from the consumer will be that the animals shall have it better and better and be closer and closer to the natural. And here we're running into a little, little challenge here, because they want the animal to be poor, so we don't have to dehorn them, but they still have to be natural. And that is with horn. So that is an issue here. But I think in the long run, the poultness will win, because that will definitely be the best for the animal.
Yeah, and then again, it's the balance between getting that gene into the population, but animal welfare is other things than only polled. I mean, it can fertility and health and all these things. Mm. We need to balance those.
Yes, you're absolutely right there. It is a balance of what we're working with, and if we are looking on poultness and putting a lot of selection pressure into that trait, saying that they need to be polled, then we would run into the problem that we cannot select as hard on other health, general health, calving traits, and so on, meaning that in the long run, we will lose a little bit here. Meaning that if we're saying they need to be polled, then we also have to accept that they maybe need to be have a little bit more other health, they need to be a little bit more animals dying as young, and so on, because we cannot select on all things at the same time. So of course it have a price. And if we are breeding for poultness and all the animals get polled and we don't have to dehorn, we will lose a little bit. And there, of course, it's a balance. Because, okay, if we get rid of the dehorning, but maybe 1% extra of the calf is dying when they are young, what is most animal welfare here? Is that the dehorning where you have a pain for a short, or is that animal is dying instead? So it is a very hard balance.
Yeah, and it's a really good question, and it leads me to, like legislation and political pressure and stuff like that. What should they be aware of? Because that's one of the consequences if you, let's say that you just say, okay, let's push the polled genetics, but it has consequences.
It has very much consequences, and they need to be smart when they do it. I have seen regulation where they said you need to be use polled bulls, and some of them even talk about you need to use homozygotic polled bulls all the time, so you're sure all of the animals will be polled, but that will meaning losing a lot on the other traits. And I strongly recommend that they do not put regulation on the bull level. They should always put it on the offspring level. So saying that you the offspring shall be polled, or you need to have at least maybe 50% of poll, and then increase it over time. So we're not losing too much on your other trait, other animal welfare trait also. But they could say that when they're looking at the offspring, because if you're having a homozygotic cow, then doesn't matter what bull you're using, the offspring will always be polled. So if you have a homozygotic cow, then there's no need to push in a polled sire. You can use a horn sire with a very high genetic level on outer health or other traits that you really need to get into your herd. So therefore, it's a lot better to put it on the offspring instead of putting on the bull.
All right. So to summarize, Jakob, from a breeding perspective, what are the three most important things to be aware of when using polled genetics in a dairy or beef herd?
The first one is definitely when you select your animals to use, your bulls to use in your herd, you need to look on your total merit. Don't go too much on compromise. Don't go in and say, it doesn't matter, I only want polled bulls, and just pick whatever it is. Look on the total merit level also. That's very important. And the next thing is that you also need to look a bit on inbreeding, because in some breeds, we still have that not too many polled lines. They are related. So if you're pushing very hard on poultness, you can run into to inbreeding issue in your herd, and that will reduce your health, your fertility, and so on. And the last thing is, when you introduce it in your herd, do it smart. Find a smart way to introduce it. That could, for example, if you combine with the genomic selection, genomic test, then when you test your animal, you also get the poult status on that. And then you could go in and say, okay, I test all my females. Then I use a little bit more sexed semen on the one that is poult, a little bit more beef on the one that is horned, maybe, for example, using that way around. So you in that way slowly increase your poult level in your herd by using the information you also have from your females instead of just from the bulls.
Thanks for joining the Breedcast today. Together with Senior Breeding Manager Jakob Lygavorgaard, we've looked at the challenges with dehorning in dairy herds and how you can use poult genetics to get better animal welfare and meet the new demands. If you'd like to learn more, please visit vikinggenetics.com. Thank you, Jakob Lygavorgaard, for sharing your knowledge and expertise with us. Thank you to everyone out there for tuning in. If you have an idea for a topic in cattle breeding or a question like Mary had, please visit breedcast.com or text us on the Viking Genetics Facebook page. My name is Hilke Biesma. Please join me for the next episode of the Breedcast about an alternative way of producing milk, which is growing in popularity, seasonal calving.